This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. This is the iFanboy Pick'em League Podcast, episode 529, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you. Fanboy Pick'em League Podcast, episode 529. My name is Connor Kilpatrick. I'm here with Josh Flanagan.
Hello, everyone.
And Ron Richards.
Not Jeff Cannata.
You are Ron Richards.
Not Jeff Cannata.
Listen, Jeff, we've made some changes, and one of them is you're Jeff now.
I love Jeff, but I'm not him. So.
We know. We're painfully
Thank
aware.
Thank you, Jeff.
We are a fanboy. We like comics. We read a stack of comics. One of us picks our favorite book. We call it the Pick of the Week. We'll talk about that book on the show. We'll talk about other stuff, maybe some listener mail, but this week, no, maybe. We'll see. It'll be fun. Spoiler warning, this is a review show. There'll be some spoilers, so there you go. You're warned. And Josh had the pick on the second Crazy Light week in a row.
Yeah.
Which is weird.
Fifth week.
Sometimes. Right, last week was super light, so yep. It was odd.
They just split it up. They were like, oh, we only had 4 weeks of books. Let's just spread them out.
Fifth week.
It's great. Keep saying that.
Fifth week. Jeff.
Listen, as long as we have one Italian-American pop culture commentator, does it matter who it is?
This is a delayed reaction.
The pick of the week was Black Science number 21.
So good.
Now, enough issues that they can buy alcohol. Yeah, it's one of those things. Sometimes you get a light week. I think this happened last week where you kind of go, wow, God, what am I going to do about this pick? And as soon as I read Black Science, I was in the middle of it, and I was like, well, that's my pick. it wasn't even like that this was a super special issue or whatever. This does conclude this arc, God World. It's part 5 of 5. And
it was a pretty big issue, I would say.
It was. It wasn't. I don't know. They haven't been bad. It's not like I've been waiting for a good issue, I guess, is my point.
No, but I mean, plot-wise is a pretty important issue.
Yes. So basically, Grant is traveling through all of these dimensions, trying to get his family back. And he ends up in this dimension that's super similar to the one that he came from. But in it, what is her name?
Rebecca.
Rebecca, who basically caused a lot of problems, had landed here.
She was his lab assistant, He was having an affair with her. Turned out she was a little evil. She's pretty much the bad guy at this point now that Kadir is gone.
So she landed in this dimension and she killed this dimension's version of herself and took over her life. And it was an improved version of what her life was back on her original dimension, and her brother's still alive, and it's a whole thing. And Grant comes here, and basically the whole story is about what he should do about that. Does he make the choice to let sleeping dogs lie and leave it as it is, or does he you know, take revenge on her? And, you know, even though he is a new Grant McKay, and in this, he's wearing an outfit where he looks exactly like Ian McKay. Even though he's a new Grant McKay,
it's McKay.
I know, but I said that way and I decided to stick with it when I said Ian. I was like, that's not right, but I'm going to move through. Oh, and there's Ron. Quiet, Jeff. And he makes the decision to take retribution on her by informing everybody about who she is, and everybody that she had gotten her life back. Now they all hate her, and she's, you know, going to be, I don't know how that works legally.
Yeah, I was thinking about that too as he left the dimension after telling her brother and the cops and everyone that she was and how she had murdered herself. I was thinking, how's that going to go?
Yeah, what is the process on that?
I thought of that. And I thought, boy, it's got to be tough to even convince the other person that it's not her.
If someone random person called your wife up, Josh, and said, "Hey, you should be aware that the Josh you're living with is actually from another dimension. He murdered your Josh." Would she immediately buy it?
Well, they all did in this. But
That's what I mean.
Listen, when you're reading this issue, that is a question you have to wrestle with, and I decided that I don't care.
Yeah. No, I don't care. I was just thinking that during the final scene. So.
Yeah, and the point remains that, you know, he made the choice, and now she's living, you know, with what happens to that, or not living, or as the case may be. And I really liked what the story told about Grant and sort of where he is. I just felt like a very human and sort of well thought out, like, puzzle for him to have to deal with. And I liked how it went down, and I mean, you're looking at this, Rebecca, and you're like, well, she's not evil in this. And she killed herself, so that brings up questions, because it's herself. But is it? I don't know. It was just
honestly, who among us wouldn't do this?
I don't think I could kill me.
I'd have no problem killing you.
Well, I didn't say me. You'd have to kill me.
Just would not hesitate.
Like a
drop
bug.
Of a hat.
Like a bug.
Listen, if another Josh from another dimension came, I'd be like, oh, well, I can't have two of them.
That's not for you to decide.
I can't have it, Josh. I can't have it. Won't do it. Can't have it.
I just, you know, so is that on top of Mateo Scalera again? He must be so confused about the tweets he receives. About people who are repeating the fact that he needs to stop it. Like, he's like, who is this man who hates me? But he needs to stop.
He doesn't talk like Super Mario.
He's Italian, right? I don't know. I don't know what he sounds like.
He is Italian.
I know he doesn't look like Super Mario. I know that. Either way, he's one fucking hell of an artist, and every single issue that comes out holds that up. There's never been one where, like, you know, he kind of slacked off on this one. It's great.
This arc has been super solid. This arc has been great because I mean, in terms of the character work that Remender did going with the Grant character and the wrestling with who he is and what he's done and like some just stellar character work. And then even with this, where, you know, that, like, and he even says in the letter columns, he's like an old fashioned revenge issue, you know, like it was great to see that kind of action, you know, kind of take place. And then I did love the flashback with him as the, you know, angry punk scientist, you know,
which there's a lot of things
that,
seemingly
I hated him so much.
Why did you hate him?
I hated him so much in that flashback scene.
Yeah. True. Well,
I hated him.
Yeah.
I liked the scene.
Yeah.
Yeah,
he's an idiot. Back
I just like the character design. The character design cracked me.
Everything about it was great. It's almost noir-esque. Like, there's been a murder. There's like an evil twin. There's a really brutal bit of revenge. I mean, it was almost like a nice one-shot issue.
Yeah, solid issue. Super good, great cover. I know that I wasn't really loving the colors after they'd made the change, but I was like, I was cool. I was at peace within this. I thought this whole thing looked good. I have zero complaints. I love this issue, and we're 21 issues in, and you know, unlike some other sort of ongoing series, you know, I don't feel like we're long in the tooth. I feel like I can stick with this for a while. You know, I'm I'm really enjoying it. I'm glad it exists.
Yeah.
It's just intelligent. Like, it's intelligent and it's full of feeling. It's those two things at the same time with wonderful art. It's all the things I want to come.
Yeah, I mean, it's intelligent, it's full of feeling, and also, like, what I love about it is that is just the momentum. It's just the speed that this series has gone at, and particularly in this arc, like, and a lot of it is, you know, ties into what Scalera is doing with the art and all that sort of stuff, but, like, so many speed lines, and you get the sense of, like, when something is urgent and happening, like, oh, God, I got to, you get the sense of that pace.
He's really good at when she, you know, she's driving back. Oh no, yep. You know, and you're instantly moving.
Yep,
it feels like it's the closest comic books come to moving. You know, for a static piece of art, it's wonderful.
Yeah, really well done, really solid. Oh, good. I'm glad the pick is the end of the arc. It should be. You know, this is we collected in trade in like a month or so. So if people aren't reading it, I was in the comic book store a couple of weeks ago, and we're doing recommendations for people, and I was like, just pick up all the volumes of Black Science, and you'll be entertained. So, yeah.
Next up, Captain America: Sam Wilson #7.
Okay.
This was like a big issue because apparently it's. Even though it's issue #7, it's the 75th anniversary of Captain America.
Coming out every 10 years.
Yeah.
you got a nice little riff on the old Captain America punches Hitler in the face with Captain America punching Captain America in the face on the cover.
That's a geriatric man.
Yeah.
And that did not occur in this book
at all.
There's sort of the main story. With two artists on it, the Sam story with Angel and Zeta and Matt Yackey on art. And then as you switch to the Steve Rogers story, it turns into Daniel Acuna, which I like very much. I guess the big moment here
Before we talk about the big moment, because I feel like but I don't want this to get lost. Acuna, like, I haven't been reading this, and I'm kind of kicking myself because I love Acuna, and he's just great. There's a panel in the middle of the Steve story where stuff happens, and then a priest goes to talk to Steve, and Steve whips his head around and says, "Who the hell are you?" And it's like the expression on Steve Rogers' face that Acuna put on this. I love that panel. Like, if we still did the weekend panels, I would push for that panel because I just love the shocked look. So.
Yeah, you don't have to push for him. You could just have it.
We didn't. There wasn't a big like. Okay, guys, it's only 4:00.
It was like a vetting process. It was just like, yeah.
But even going through it, like,
sorry, Ron.
In the bowling alley, there's a little girl who pouts. That pout panel was great. I mean, like Acuna, they're just like these little moments of Acuna that are just like so subtle and just like he's great. He's a beast. So.
Really wonderful. He's one of the best guys working. Easy. I think that I had dropped off this book. So I feel like I missed a little of this story. I think in the middle of Sam as a wolf, I was like, all right, that'll do for now. Yeah. But I came back on to read this one. And basically the upshot with this is that Steve Rogers has been returned to correct Steve Rogers' age.
Youth and vigor.
Yes.
Yeah. So weird. So weird.
Thank goodness.
As far as I can tell, him and Crossbones were shoving each other with the shield. And then
you take it. No, you take it.
Yeah, you take it. And then he got younger.
The girl that he was trying to protect is a living cosmic cube. Yeah. So she can do anything. So she fixed it.
Yeah.
He's got a nice, like, he's got a like a white man overbite when he's back.
He's got a pronounced eyebrow. Pronounced jaw there.
Yeah. He's doing like a David Brent guitar solo face. Like, and he just changed the chord.
I always like the, the wacky cosmic reset button. So this, we're gonna get to the next part in a second. But I read this issue specifically for the backup stories. I didn't really read the main story. I skimmed them because I haven't been reading the book, and you know, not a fan of Falcon Cap, not a fan of Old Cap. So skimmed through it. Appreciated that Cunha art, saw that Steve had been resurrected. Went, really loved the double page spread. That was basically the history of Captain America by Cunha, which is wonderful.
Yep.
Happy he's back, but really just more excited for the backup story.
So about those backup stories, you got an all star all-star team on that. You have Joss Whedon and John Cassaday on one. You have Tim Sale, written and drawn by Tim Sale, colored by Dave Stewart. And then last, there's Greg Rucka and Mike Perkins. You may remember Mike Perkins was sort of the alternate artist on most of Brubaker's run.
Yep. How about that double-page spread of Tim Sale?
That Tim Sale story was the good one. Yep. I didn't really love these backup very much, but the Tim Sale one was great.
Oh, I loved the Joss Whedon one. That was my favorite by far. Mm. If I could have given a pick of the week, it would have been to a backup story. It would have been to the Joss Whedon one.
Well, that would have been fascinating. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was good.
I mean,
I guess I could have.
Yeah, you could have. You could do whatever you want, Connor.
It inspired all the ideals about you know what America should be. You know, not aggressive but defensive.
I think I thought that I like that idea, but I think like the Amerigun, that like I think it just felt anachronistic. It just didn't feel like a World War II thing.
So you like World War II?
Yes. I mean, I don't like it, but as
but
a subject,
I'm a fan. I mean, I was
a huge fan. You know, like the Reich. Oh.
This is very funny.
They had some things to say about eugenics, and I just...
The Tim Sale story was great. Really fantastic. Near-silent story about Steve rescuing an artifact from his childhood that had been stolen by Hydra.
Yep.
And then I liked the Greg Rucka story, which was the team-up with Natasha.
Yep. I don't know if it was the colorist, because it was like with Frank Darmada, but he wasn't the main colorist. But it didn't... Mm-hmm. I don't know, it looked a lot different than that looked in sort of the Brubaker run, I guess. It's a lot looser.
Yep.
We always said Darmada was the thing that held the battle together.
Yeah, and he looks like he was only there for like some color assists. Oddly enough, it was what's the guy's name? Alan Troy. Yeah. So just Darmada was there, but not really taking command. And I think you're right. I think
he's in the vicinity.
Yeah. So it was like reminiscent of, but I was like, it's not. Because I actually like went back to say, well, who Andy Troy? I went back to say, like, why does this not look as good? Because that's an artist we've had lots of experience with. But it's interesting to see how much looser Cassaday is too, which I think works for him. I've decided.
Yeah, it didn't have that stiff photo, you know, realistic look that I didn't like in Star Wars, and this felt like classic Cassaday.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. This felt like Astonishing X-Men. He did a Captain America book a long time ago.
Yeah. It felt so much like it was old Cassaday that I did a double check. I'm like, is this a reprint?
I did too.
Yeah. Yep, I had the same. So I was glad to see that it's not a reprint. So that's good. So
I don't know what this means for. I guess he's not. Even though he's young, he's not necessarily going to be Captain America again. So it's probably still.
Yes, he is.
Is he?
There's two caps.
They're all going to be. Oh. You get to be Captain America, and you.
That's
get to
what Marvel's
be
doing
America.
Now. Is that they bring back the heroes, but they're keeping the other ones. So there's two Hawkeyes,
two Wolverines.
This is a Sith
Wolverine,
thing.
Two Captain Americas, and I'm sure there'll be two Thors eventually. Well, there still are two Thors.
Yeah.
So everybody gets their hero.
There's a hero for everybody. Can we talk?
That's literally diluting the brand.
Yes.
It's the
definition
of it. So can we talk about Daredevil now, please? I've been dying to.
This was the week of crazy guns.
This is the most ridiculous gun I've ever seen.
It's awesome. I loved it.
So in Daredevil, like the shit's hitting the fan and Ten Fingers and the hand and all this kind of stuff is all going down in Chinatown. And on page 2 and 3, we get a double page spread. And there's this demon hand thing that's tearing through all Ten Fingers people. And Ten Fingers runs to a cabinet and opens it up. And in the cabinet, there is a couple of regular revolvers. And then there are two guns that are long and have trigger holes for Ten Fingers. And now I understand the dude's got Ten Fingers, but this does not work on a physics level. This doesn't work on a... like the anatomy, like, right? And also it's a 6-bullet revolver with 10 triggers.
9. The thumb doesn't get one.
Oh, 9. Right. I'm sorry. 9. I turned.
It should have had 9 barrels.
I turned that page and I laughed out loud because it was ridiculous.
That's that right there is good old fashioned comic booky goodness.
Yes.
That doesn't make sense. It has 9 triggers. Yeah, but it doesn't. 9 triggers.
And
it, I accept.
And the thing is that it looks like on the wall, it looks very long. Like, it looks like a big gun, and then he's holding it, and it doesn't match the size. Like, it just works in his hand. Like, his hand gets bigger for the hold the gun, but it's smaller than... Oh, my God, it makes no sense. I love it.
It's like Megatron.
Yes.
Megatron never made any sense in that way. We just went with it.
And what was great is that really all he did was he shot both guns once, and then they got knocked out of his hand.
Think if they provided anything else, it's extra grip. I mean, that's the one real tactile difference.
Here's the thing, if it had the holes without triggers and it was a grip thing, I would give it more leeway. But the fact that there were 9 triggers and it's clearly a 6-bullet revolver.
He can use any of the triggers. It's just giving you options.
Just made no sense.
Or it's like a code. You have to pull the 4th, 5th, and 7th one to actually fire the gun.
It's like a piano. You have to do it in a sequence or something. Then it's just not useful. It's just not useful at that point.
It's only he can fire it. That way it can't be used against him.
Yeah, maybe. Right. But how much dexterity is he getting from that 8th finger, the 2nd ring finger? You know what I mean?
As a guitar player, I mean, you just imagine. It's just a matter of practice, concentration. He seems to be some sort of monk kind of thing going on there. So,
oh God, the shot of the guns on the wall with all those triggers, it just is ridiculous.
It's funny. If you hadn't read this, like, you might be picturing a large portion of the page. It's just one small panel at the bottom. It's almost an afterthought, but Ron seized on it.
It just says zero right in on it. It just looks so ridiculous.
Did you enjoy the arc as this arc came to an end?
Yeah. I've come around on the art. I've enjoyed everything. It's just the gun is so ridiculous. the drawing of the gun on the wall, like, it doesn't even make any sense. Like, it just...
Is this a plus or a minus for you?
It's a plus.
Thumbs up. I just want to make that clear to the people.
I hope you had like an outline of people have tools on, you know, tool sheds. They keep the outline of the tools. So like a big gun outline. One of the minions has to draw it. Yeah.
What's great is that no one else in the book reacts to the fact that he's got a ridiculous, stupid gun.
Matt can't see it.
Right.
Everybody else are his supplicants. So.
You're right, though. His hands should be like 3 times the size they're drawn to be if they go by this gun thing. Weird.
The whole 10 fingers thing has been weird. It's just been weird.
I'll tell you something else. Those pegs do not really work.
No, they do not.
there's a small amount of them. Don't.
But what I don't understand is that, okay, so he's got the 2 guns with the 9 triggers. Why does he have 4 other regular guns? Does he use those too? Like, what? Like, why wouldn't you have all your guns have 9 triggers?
I'll tell you something. When you got 2 guns, 18 combined triggers, jams happen. You're going to need a backup. Something simpler.
It's a 6-bullet revolver.
Why does the handle curve so sensuously too?
It really does. There's no way that a hand fits it. There's no, like, it fits. No anatomical sense. Oh God.
You know what though? Leverage has got to be weird on that because you're only really grasping it at the top where your thumb holds it.
Right.
The bottom is really going to be loose.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
There's no counterweight.
How strong are the bottom 2 fingers? Like those outliers out there, those got to be the weakest fingers you've ever seen.
The gunsmith knows that though. Those have less tension.
All right, maybe.
I'm trying. I'm not invested in this fight.
Oh man, I love it. So yeah, that was the saving grace for this whole arc.
So, right, that was it.
Yeah, that's all I needed. That was all I needed.
Okay. Something for everyone is what I got going on there. I wanted to check in on Four Eyes Hearts of Fire, number 3. Terrible title.
Is the sitcom version?
Hearts of Fire.
You remember.
Yeah. I don't know. Was that Richard Lewis? Richard Lewis and Jamie Lee Curtis?
No, it was I think it was the John Ritter political one, wasn't it? With Billy Bob Thornton.
Wow, I don't know. I don't remember.
I got nothing on that.
I'll look it up while you guys talk.
That's fine. Go ahead and read it. I just wanted to check in with this. I used to when Four Eyes first came out a really long time ago, the art by Max Fiemora, I really, really liked it. It was like this great sort of Depression era tale of Italian immigrants and a bunch of different kinds of people who were fighting dragons, like as a underground sort of sport kind of thing. And the little kid's dad dies, and so he takes over the mantle as the sort of dragon tamer. And now we're later, and this is the story of sort of what comes next, where the kid's dad is dead, and so the mother shacks up with this guy who runs a vegetable stand, who's trying to sort of be the new father, and he's an asshole, and the kid hates it, and he's resentful. And there's, I keep going back and forth of whether I'm enjoying it or not, but this one kind of pulled me in a little more. There's a lot of racial politics going on at the same time, because it's the 30s. So you've got the Italian immigrants, and you have sort of the black dragon workers, who are a different thing. Then there's a Russian crime boss. So all this stuff floating around. It's very different than a lot of the other comics. And then you've got dragon fighting in the middle of it. So this one kind of pulled me around, and I was really into it. What's interesting is that this one isn't actually drawn by Max Fiemora. It's drawn by Rafael Ortiz. And Fiemora, like, colors it, but there's not a lot of color in it. It's mostly gray wash with a bit of red here and there for the gloves and the dragon, basically. Like, when the dragon shows up, it's important that it's there. But I don't know what's going to happen. Like, I'm completely a little rapt about sort of where the characters are going to go, because it feels like everyone in this is just going to fail and the story's going to be over at any point. So I don't know when it's going to turn around, because I don't think that can happen. Like, that would be a bad end. If just everyone's like, no, it didn't work out. He had to work in the vegetable stand. There was no dragons anymore because they all died. That's a little what it feels like it's going to do right now.
He died of tuberculosis.
Yeah, but it's again, that could happen. But, you know, like, we've seen Joe Kelly do a billion things, and he can kind of do anything. Like, you know, he's known really, you know, I don't know if people even still remember, but, you know, he's known for doing a really kick-ass Deadpool run for a long time, which in a lot of ways is responsible for the movie that everybody loves so much. And then he went and he did a wonderful run on Spider-Man for a while. You know, just really great. Remember, I can still remember that Rhino story, which is also drawn by Max Fiemora. And he did a bunch of creator-owned projects a few years ago, and they kind of stalled. And then this one's the one that came back. And it's kind of just interesting to see a guy who has sort of total freedom to do whatever he wants. And it's a really sort of different story than, like, he can tell all sorts of different kinds of stories. I think it's still worth checking out. If you read that way back when, you should be reading this, because otherwise I won't get to find out what happens.
All right.
So I'm almost ashamed to admit I nailed this one. Hearts of Fire ran for 3 seasons, 54 episodes, starred John Ritter, Marky Post, Billy Bob Thornton, Ed Asner.
What year?
1992 to 1995.
Okay. Wow. Really? That late? That's probably, yeah, okay.
Yeah. Clark Duke, even.
Clark Duke, really?
And?
Was like a kid?
Yeah, he was the son.
Yeah. I watched, there's some, like, WBIN, and then there's another word after it, has been showing, like, old sitcoms. It's like I was watching Family Ties the other night. That show is great. That show is as good as anything. That show is so good. Like, objectively good. Not even, like if it was airing right now, if you just, you know, change the clothes. Except Nick. Nick is terrible. I don't know what he's supposed to be.
Oh, the boyfriend?
He's weird.
Yeah, yeah.
He's supposed to be, like, a bad boy, but he looks like he's doing, like, a bad Rocky, Stallone and Rocky, but, like, with a purple belt around his waist for some reason. Well, Why do you hate Italians? Hey. No, not that.
The earring always bothered me with him.
It's just funny because at the time he was supposed to be a tough guy, and you look at him now, and tough is not what I get from it.
Yeah,
he looks like a bass player in Ziggy Stardust's band. It's not.
He played Metallo in Lois and Clark.
Scott Valentine. Yep. Anyway, it's a great show.
I'm glad to hear that it holds up. So.
Oh, it's great. If you watch Michael J. Fox in that, you're like, wow, he was like, no wonder he became a star in that. Like, he's really excellent. There's all these just great reactions stuff, and it's totally like super typical sitcom stuff that they can't really get away with now because it's too cliched. But they did it. Well.
You're just gonna keep on going about this, aren't you?
I was very impressed.
All right.
It was a light week. I don't know if you noticed in the comics, but more about Hearts of Fire.
So, well, the good news is that if you want to catch up on Hearts of Fire, you can get the complete series on DVD on Amazon, only $12. How can you beat that deal?
That's it.
You can do that by going to fanboy.com/. Yeah. Wow. Well, it's, you know, heavily discounted. $30 originally. You go to fanboy.com/support. You can find our button to shop on Amazon. You can make all your purchases. If you wanted to buy the complete series of Hearts of Fire, I'm sure there are family-sized DVDs on there, too.
Somebody out there paid $75 for that.
We get a little piece of the action. Nothing comes out of your pocket. Keeps the show going. Keeps us in new equipment. And keeps the servers running and all that stuff. And you can also help us out by going to fanboy.com/support. Become an FMY member. Yes. Family Ties, the complete series, for $43. That's a pretty good deal, actually.
Not bad at
all. It is.
All right. $43. So, iFanboy.com/support. You can go and become an iFanboy member for $3 a month, $30 a year. You can give us support directly. We appreciate everyone who does that. You can also go to that page and give us just a random donation. If you wanted to give us $43.17 in order to buy Family Ties, the complete series, we would accept that. That's how much it costs. So there you go. So that's how you help the show. Keep it going. FMY.com/support.
Another one of those series I wanted to just check in on real quick was Revival. Number 38 was out this week. Tim Seeley and Mike Norton.
We haven't talked about this in a while.
Yeah. You know, at one point I put this in my top five series. But it definitely, like, it's got definitely a feel of like, is this just going to happen forever? And I guess that's okay. But I kind of am like, all right, let's.
I feel like I'm pretty sure they're winding it down.
Yeah, I think they need to. One of the things that they've done here is they've shifted the characters that we're paying attention to a bit. So where before is very clearly like, you know, Dana Cypress was the main character. In this, it's her just sort of ex-husband, her son's father, and his girlfriend are sort of the main characters in this. And we're spending a lot of time with the woman who's in charge of the sort of facility where they keep all the revivers. But it's very much in a, like, now we're just living in this world and it doesn't feel like we're going towards an end. And I think we might need to do that, at some point. This is a really good issue. And there's definitely a thing happening. So maybe we're going towards that, but it's a great book, great cover.
I forget exactly, but I recall seeing, I'm pretty sure it's like, it's going to end at like 41 or something like that. I think that's the,
that's three issues from now.
I might be wrong. I could be wrong.
I think they can do it. Like, yeah. That would be bad. I just know I said what I said, but I think that might be too soon.
Yeah.
Well, this is reminiscent of that email we got a couple weeks ago about Image books going on too long.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, as it was a light week and I had the pick of the week, I read Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur number 5. I don't know what it was. I'm not entirely sure, but...
I read the first issue. I'm pretty sure we talked about the first issue. I did not stay with it, though.
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure what it's supposed to be. I kind of enjoyed it. Like, I like the drawings of the big dinosaur who likes a little girl. And if that's all it is, you know, that's fine. I don't know who Moon Girl is. Do you know, like, is there a precedent for this in some way?
Nope.
I don't know, but it's a comic that exists for, you know, not me. Like, so she says this is a job for Moon Girl, and she puts on roller skates and some sort of utility belt and one red boxing glove, and the dinosaur really likes her, so she saves the dinosaur. And, you know, it's exactly what it sounds like from what I just described. There doesn't seem to be a deeper meaning here. She's got, like, Inspector Gadget type of things. Like, she hit a button on her little pack and a helicopter sticks out of her bag. I think kids might like this. And the dinosaur is very sweet and he gets sad and doesn't want to leave her. So now they're going to be a team together. I tried it. It's not pick of the week. It turns out.
there's your cover out.
There's your quote.
Yep.
Not pick of the week. Josh Flanagan.
You have to add. It turns out.
It turns out.
That colors it. Not pick of the week, it turns out. Josh Flanagan, I family.
It looks like Revival 40.
Yeah. Last issue. Moving on.
No,
All new X-Men number 7. Again, I'm enjoying All New X-Men. I'm enjoying what Dennis Hopeless is doing. But this issue kind of bummed me out because basically what happened is that Toad has kidnapped Cyclops, and he's blaming Cyclops for everything that's happened to him, and he's going to kill young Cyclops, thinking that will fix the timeline or whatnot. And there's a moment when they're trying to figure out, like, what happened to Toad? Why is he doing this? And they find his YouTube profile where he's been vlogging. And
right.
It goes back to when he was the janitor at the school during Wolverine and the X-Men when Jason Aaron was writing it. And I was like, oh, I like that. And then
that was good.
It was great. And then they show other posts as I guess he was with Paige, and then Paige left him, and then he becomes a drunk, and then he starts blaming Cyclops. Why he's broadcasting this on YouTube, I don't know.
And you'd think they would have had someone monitoring this kind of thing.
Yeah, maybe. Like,
in the X-Men, like a computer program that monitors maybe villain blogs.
Right, yeah, exactly. And so now Toad is back in his old... really old Brotherhood of Evil Mutants costume, which from the 60s, and the issue was good. It's been, you know, I'm enjoying, this is my favorite X-Men series out of all the new stuff, but this reminded me of Wolverine the X-Men and made me really miss that. And B, just kind of was like, well, you know, like Jason Aaron had done something really interesting with Toad and made him into an interesting character, and this, like, I feel like this regression didn't make any sense. Also, without the context of whatever he's blaming Cyclops for, you know, and all, because we still don't know what happened. But it just didn't make sense.
Everything. So I mean, everything.
No, he's not responsible for everything, Connor.
No, all the troubles of the X Men in the last 20 years have been Cyclops's.
You're baiting me, and I'm not going to take the bait.
I'm not. That's the story they've been telling. He's been the catalyst for all the problems, and I know you don't like it, but that's what they've been doing. So yeah. That's what he's been blaming. That's what he's blaming him for.
But all of these books have been pointing to a single event that happened, and we still don't know what that event was or what happened there. And that's annoying me. But anyway, whatever. This is just the first issue that kind of bummed me out for those reasons. And also, he smashes Cyclops in the face with a bottle of Jack Daniels.
Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
Does he still have that
Cyclops with mask?
The mask with the X-Men.
No. Yeah, this is the young X-Men.
Yeah, regular visor.
These are the ones from the past.
Yeah.
Got it.
Old Cyclops is dead.
Yep.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Yeah.
Which I'm hoping they bring... Whatever, I'm not going to get into that. Anyway, so... All right.
Please.
And then finally, Star Wars Corner, Darth Vader, number 17. Vader down. Josh, are you sticking with this?
Yeah.
Okay.
I was about to say, of course, and then I remembered that I sort of threatened not to, but yeah, right. Yeah, I'm in.
The thing about this issue is that there's a really weird fucking moment with that droid. Right?
The one where he's like, I have a suggestion.
Yes.
I don't know what happened there exactly.
So basically, Vader is on this planet, and there's a civil, you know, there's a war going on with this planet and over mining or who knows whatever, and... Their Vader's ship gets disabled. There's a trap, and so they're like basically under siege, right? And all the opposing forces are just attacking at him. And luckily, Vader has a whole bunch of battle droids who are, you know, helping stem the tide of battle. But they're kind of stuck in the ship, and they don't really know what to do. And so they're trying to figure out, you know, they're all kind of strategizing what to do. And the murder droid, the black C-3PO S droid, goes, "I have a suggestion," and basically suggests pumping human blood into the droids. I think
I thought it was to make an engine run on human blood.
It was something with human blood, and it was...
Definitely.
He says, we drain human blood and use it to drive an engine of my own design. And then he says, think of it, a droid more man than machine. And then Vader just goes, you're going to regret pressing this droid, and then moves on. And for a moment, it was just like, what the fuck is this? Like, it was really dark and really scary, and the droid has a little needle coming out of his finger, and it creeped me out, and I worry about Kieran Gillen now. So.
I think this is the only part
just
of it
now?
Really. I think that's the part of the book he's super interested in.
Yeah, I know.
I think that's clear enough.
It was weird. So Vader down.
Vader down.
All right. So that's all the books we read.
Are you guys still reading all the books?
Yeah, I'm reading all the books except for Obi-Wan and Anakin one, which I refuse to read.
I'm not reading that. What's the Jedi, like the other Jedi one, starts with a K? Not reading that.
Kanan.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
I'm just reading
Dark
Vader. Are
you going to read Poe Dameron next week?
Yes.
Yeah.
I will read Poe Dameron because it's Phil Noto. All right, so that wraps up all the books that we read this week. If you read books and you enjoyed them and you want to comment on them or share them, you can go to ifanboy.com where you can comment on the posts for the show. And so, Connor, you were last weekend, you were glued to your computer on Saturday morning, weren't you?
Well, last weekend was WonderCon, and DC did their DC Rebirth announcement presentation, and they very smartly live-streamed it for everyone to watch who wasn't at WonderCon. I think more... Not every panel, but more of these bigger panels should do that kind of thing.
Yep.
It's very good they got much more exposure for it than they would have gotten otherwise. Yep. On a 90-minute event, they laid out the creative team and somewhat premises for most of the books they announced. And I went in very apprehensive just because the history of DC over the last 5 or 6 years isn't great. And the leadership is still in place, so... at this point, it's the balls in their court to prove that they learned from their mistakes, and they were. Did you, either of you guys watch it or does anyone watch
no.
it?
No, I didn't watch it.
They were sort of unusually candid about the things they did wrong. Jim Lee admitted they messed up the costume designs for Fitness 52.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you guys feel validated?
Yes.
Yes.
We'll see how far they go back. He said they went too far with the redesigns.
Yep.
So they announced as many people. I mean, we already got the book announcements, but we got the titles, and you know, there's a lot to look forward to. There's a lot of names who are holdovers, and those aren't as exciting. But they brought on some interesting talent. You know, we all were hoping Tom King was going to take over Superman, but he's taking over Batman, which is just as exciting. And I'm really excited about Scott Snyder's All-Star Batman book, which is in continuity, but on its own, featuring an all-star. I mean, the artists he's got: Romita Jr., Jock, Sean Murphy, Paul Pope, Declan Shalvey.
This is the answer to how do you keep Scott Snyder after that long Batman run and like give him a book where he can just do whatever he wants with whomever he wants.
That's key.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like since he has started there, like he has always. He's like Rick Remender. Like he's always like, I need these artists to work with. And they're always good artists. Or Mark Miller. Like he's got a real sense of what will make the difference.
Yep.
Yeah. Is that in continuity or is that sort of just like go do your own thing?
Oh, it's in continuity.
Fair enough.
It's in continuity as much as any book is in the continuity. You know, it's an all-star book. And it's not like All-Star Batman, the first version, which was completely out of continuity. But this is in continuity, but doesn't mean he's got to be beholden to what's happening in continuity. He's still going to tell his stories, which are focused on the Rogues Gallery.
Right.
So, you know, it's in the world. He's wearing the new costume, which survived the rebirth. And but other than that, he can just tell his stories, hopefully. Right. But Tom King's very exciting. Tom King, who is a longtime iFanboy listener, who was a friend of the show, he's one of the more exciting new voices. He's bringing his... Grayson artist over Michael Janin, who's switching off arcs with David Finch because they're doing biweekly on this book, and Tim Seeley's hanging around with Nightwing. I'm looking for the Batman books. I'm pretty happy about the announcements for all the Batman books. The Hope Larson Raphael Albuquerque Batgirl one's really exciting.
Yeah, that one looks good.
I mean, like you've got Detective with James Tynion, which is fine, and Eddie Barrows, who I like. I like Eddie Barrows a lot. David Finch. Not so much.
Like yeah. I really don't like David Finch.
I mean, like that's a problem.
I think if you look at the Batman books alone as a microcosm of the larger announcement, I think it is a great representation of what my criticism or what my issue with this entire approach is that. And honestly, it's similar to what DC's. I think this is no different than what DC's been doing for the last year plus or so, which is having like a third of it going in the direction I'd want to see it, and then two thirds of it that just makes me shake my head and hit my floor for it.
Well, hold on.
Is that a bad track record?
What about? Yeah, first of all, that's a pretty pretty good margin. But what about the Batman books makes you shake your head?
Well, so, I mean, yeah, like, I'm elated for Tom King. I think it's great. I think it's a great opportunity. And then they put David Finch on the book, you know, and...
Well, he's a very popular artist.
No, I know. Well, yeah.
And so is Jim Lee when Scott Snyder did that Superman arc, but...
Yeah.
It didn't work.
I mean, the thing is, like, if you look at when they announced the New 52 and Capullo being the artist on Batman made everybody scratch their heads. And mm-hmm. and that turned out to be better than we could ever have imagined, and it reinvigorated his career, and now he's a superstar and all that sort of, you know, like, so I mean, the thing is that, like, I feel like DC gets a handful of creators, and you know, like, there's a Red Hood book by Scott Lobdell. Like, why is Scott Lobdell still around, still doing this?
Right. That's what I said. There's a lot of holdover names that are
I don't
have Red Hood in my list of Batman books because I just don't even.
Oh,
care.
It's not listed in the Batman books. It's outside of the Batman books. Yeah.
I like Dan Jurgens.
Yeah.
Just fine, but he's gonna helm Action Comics with art by Patrick Zercher.
Yeah, I'm really excited for that. That actually, the really? Superman books, the most interesting ones. Last week, I talked about how I loved the Dan Jurgens Superman book happening right now.
Yeah, no,
and we talked about how great of a writer he was and how he really knows how to write Superman comics.
Yeah.
They're keeping, which I didn't think would happen, they're keeping the pre-52 Superman in the world as Superman. So I don't know if that means in the Marvel style there'll be two Supermen. Well, actually, there'll be three because they're introducing the Chinese one written by Gene Luen Yang, which is also very exciting. But they're holding him over. They're gonna keep the old one around, which is the one that Jurgens has been writing to much acclaim for the last six or seven issues.
Mm-hmm. Right.
There's a lot of interesting things happening, but no one, they didn't announce a name that really blew me away in terms of, oh wow, they got this person to do.
Yeah, I mean if you ask me, the biggest thing coming out of it was the Snyder book and the list of artists that he's working with. That, you know, that's going to be a must see. And then it was it's great to see Rucka and Nicola Scott back on Wonder Woman. Yeah. It's not a step backwards, but it's a, like, I don't know. I love how much I love Rucka and I love Nicola Scott. And I think they're great. But like, he's done Wonder Woman before. Like, I don't know. I was just like, it's just Wonder Woman, you know, like.
The thing with me is that as I look through all of these, there's a couple of names that will make me go, oh, and then sort of the second name, whether it's the writer or artist or vice versa, makes me go, oh.
Yeah.
And that's there's not a package in any of these that I'm excited. The closest I get is Flash.
Yeah.
Which is Josh Williamson writing and Carmine DiGiacomenico.
With covers by Carl Kershaw, which
is such a tease.
Which is such a tease and pisses me off, because if you remember, God, when was Blackest Night?
2009?
2008, 2009. Yeah, 8 or 9 or so. During the Blackest Night mania, I had a face-to-face, in-person conversation with Jeff Johns, and I said, what do we got to do to get Carl Kershaw on The Flash? And he goes, oh, he'll never be the artist on The Flash. I'm like, why? He's like, he's not commercial enough. And now we got him doing covers. We're inching ever closer. God damn it, Jeff. Put him on The Flash.
It's a great cover.
Yeah.
You know, you got that. You got, I don't know. There's not a...
The Trinity book, I'm curious, just because it's Manipal, you know, like, you know, and I love Manipal, you know, but.
You know what? You know, it's a really good one.
What?
The Hellblazer.
Oh, you think so?
Well, you've got Simon Oliver, who did a wonderful arc on Hellblazer.
Yeah.
Great arc before, I think Andy Diggle took over to end it. No, Simon Oliver just did a mini. He was supposed to be the takeover of the series, and he never did. He did a really good mini at some point. And then the art's by Moritat, which I think is a good fit. I don't know what it's going to be. Although it says Constantine and Swamp Thing team up in order to save Abigail Arcane, which is less exciting to me.
Yeah.
That team is, you know, one of the closest that comes to being something that I really want to read. Justice League by Brian Hitch again, art by Tony Daniel.
Oh,
it's just there's
pointless.
There's an idea of what DC thinks of as their superstar artists, Ethan Van Sciver, those kind of things. And I'd like that stuff at one time, but I'm not into it anymore. So that's fine. It's just it's not speaking to me as a guy who loves comic book art. Like, the only one who seems to want artists like I like, you know, is Scott Snyder.
Yeah.
Other than that,
Yeah, you got your Suicide Squad written by Rob Williams, who we like, with art by Jim Lee and Philip Tan. So yeah, that's going to be interesting.
It's a lot of Jim
Lee-esque
based art.
Yeah, some of it. I would say a percentage of it is, but then
yeah, some of it, yeah. not all of it.
What I thought was interesting was that how boldly they went out with titles that had no creative teams.
You know, yeah. Like there's that, well, I don't know if they have them yet.
Yeah, there's that Super Sons book, Earth 2. You know, there's a whole, you know, like the Justice League of America. They don't know who's writing and drawing it, or they haven't announced it yet. Like, that's just, I mean, like, I get that they're announcing the whole line because they need to let retailers know what's coming and all stuff like that, but still a lot of holes in it, and I don't know. I mean, like, I feel like this was good. I was glad to see John's involved as much as he is. I was surprised to see a Batman Beyond book, by the way, too.
Property they've had, it's been very successful.
Yeah, yeah. But I was glad to see Geoff Johns kind of at the helm, and you know, if this can turn things around from the New 52, I hope so. But I guess the books, you know, time will tell with the books. You know,
if I can get 5 to 10 books I really love out of this, I'll be happy. Because right now, I don't think I have that many out of DC.
Yeah, agreed.
And I'm desperate for it. I'm really excited about Hope Larson, and Raphael Albuquerque, and Batgirl.
Yeah.
Just the art alone, Josh, I think that's something you might be interested in.
Yeah. You know what? I was surprised that there's no there's a big thing about Doc Shaner being signed as exclusive.
Yeah, there was no announcement. A couple of people didn't get announced who said they were working for DC, so I don't know that we're done.
Yeah,
that's
weird. As Roger said, a bunch of these books don't have.
I know that him and
now I wonder if Doc Shaner's doing the rumored Justice Society book. That'd
be amazing.
Style.
Whoa. Yeah. Well, if Jeff Parker and Doc are doing that, is it just one issue? Like, is it a Wacky Races or no? Johnny Quest.
Jeez. Right? Thank God they're not doing the Wacky Races. So
I don't know if that. Yeah, you're right. That's the one. That's the weird, like, post-apocalyptic Wacky Races.
Yeah.
No, they're doing Johnny Quest, I think, but I don't know if that is like ongoing or just a mini or whatever.
I think that's
but
an event. That's just a little mini event type thing.
Okay, because yeah. I mean, like, I'm looking at this going. And Parker's not a superstar, but like I thought him and Shaner, who have worked really well together, were going to get a book, and I thought that's going to be really good. And that could still happen to one of these, but I was kind of expecting a thing like that. Again, well, I mean, he's not a guy who necessarily puts butts in seats.
Your problem goes back to what my original concern, which is it's still the same people in charge. And,
yes.
You know, the guy who never gets talked about is the editor-in-chief.
Yeah. Never. Bob Harris.
What's his name? Bob Harris. I mean, he wasn't on the stage. He never was mentioned anywhere. It's always DiDio and Lee as the co-publishers and Johns as the CCO, but he's never mentioned, Bob Harris.
Yeah, that's weird.
You know, there's also way too much Damian in here. I really hope that they would learn from this and get rid of him, but now he's leading at least two books. We have not answered the most important question in all of this, which is how many hands does Alfred have?
Yeah, exactly.
That's really going to help me decide how I feel about this announcement.
Connor, did they take questions at the event, or no, they didn't, right?
No. Okay. They Jim Lee and DiDio and Johns basically interviewed the creative teams.
Right. Yeah. Would you, if you were in person, would you have stood up and demanded to know about Alfred?
Yes.
Okay.
I would have had a picket sign and everything.
Blue Beetle by Keith Giffen and Scott Collins. I'd read that.
Right, and that's got Ted Kord in it.
Yeah.
I really am interested. I'm really excited for, you know, the Rebirth special, which features John's all-star cast of artists like Gary Frank and
Ethan Van Sciver.
Rice. And Ethan Van Sciver. I like Ethan Van Sciver. I mean, you know.
I feel like I'm over it. I feel like it's like a band I used to like but don't really like anymore.
Yeah.
This Claire Rowe art on the...
That looks good.
Oh, that's Yannick Paquette. Never mind.
Okay, well, then I don't know.
But you know, I'm hoping to get closer to 10. But right now, I don't need, you know, other than Batman, I can't tell you about any DC books outside of Vertigo. I'm really excited about.
Right.
So any net gain will be a plus.
That Suicide Squad book is art by Jim Lee and Philip Tan. So let's be realistic about what that means.
Come on. Well,
every double ship book has two artists.
They're
alternating.
Yeah. Okay. What do you think the workload's going to be on that?
Come on, art by Jim Lee. Don't give me that.
Yeah. Well, unless he's been banking issues for 25 years.
The Gene Yang Superman book looks like it could be interesting.
Yeah.
It's like
There's a lot of interesting things here. And I think they're going in the right direction, the costumes. Supergirl's got a great costume. It's very reminiscent of the TV show. I like that Superman's is much closer to the classic look. They've got rid of all the armor lines. Batman's using the new design, which they need to tell the other artists he no longer has the giant knee pads anymore. That happened this week in the comics. I think they're taking a step in the right direction, and if anything, it'll be a process. So we'll see.
So here's it a could question. Always fall flat and fit. Here's a question, Connor. I'm asking you because I can't depend on Josh for this. But are you going to read everything?
Yeah, you and I are going to do them all, right? The first ones.
Yeah, no, I'll do it if you do it. Yeah, so I'm in.
Okay. I'm in.
Cool. Ratings.
It's going to be awesome. I'm looking forward to it.
If you want Josh to participate, tweet hashtag Josh Ratings.
I love hashtags, so that'll work.
If you don't want, tweet to iFanboy hashtag no Josh Ratings.
Yeah.
You think maybe we're overdoing that?
Nope.
No. Not even begun. We've not begun to fight. Yeah, so Ron and I are going to review all the first issues of the DC Rebirth books. If you want Josh to get involved, please hashtag Josh Ratings.
Josh Ratings.
So there you go. All right. That was the DC Rebirth announcement. I came out of it more excited than I thought I would. But that could also be because I'm so desperate to be excited about DC Comics.
I just need something to live for.
It's rough.
I remember when I felt like that, and they did the New 52.
Yeah,
we were excited about it, rightfully so, and then they blew it. And as I said, it's all about the execution. If they don't execute, then none of it's worth anything.
Oh God.
So we'll see.
All right. Do we want to do this email? It's related. We can do it quickly, right?
Sure.
Email from Ryan from Woosta, who says, I've been pondering this question for so long that DC has rebooted their universe twice during that time.
It's the only reason I included this.
In the long history of some of these characters, are there moments or key things creators have done to these characters that you can't move past and hamper your enjoyment? Example, I still can't read a Zatanna story without thinking at some point, remember when she wiped Batman's memory. So do you guys ever get hung up on things? Connor, do you ever think about Power Girl's child? Ron, can you ever look at Rogue without thinking about her losing her virginity to the Century? Josh, do you remember Hawkeye not like this?
Like this!
I can very easily look at Rogue and not think about the fucking Century. Very easily. So
I've removed the Century from my memory.
Yeah.
Well, no, that wasn't you. That was the... Somebody did. Doctor Strange or something.
I didn't even know Power Girl had a child, so it was very easy.
I removed Paul Jenkins from my memory.
I can't think of a single thing that a writer or character has done to a superhero character.
I will say there's one.
What? Yeah, there's
the classic one that we always get that we get yelled at about.
Hank Pym
hitting Janet.
Oh yeah,
yeah. That really that made a mark on that character that I doesn't seem to be possible to get past. If I'm at a second place, Arsenal.
Arsenal?
With a cat? The dead cat?
Yeah.
But I like that.
Well, I know, but it colors things.
Yeah.
There's definitely, I think it happens a little bit.
I have a much bigger problem with his trucker hat than the dead cat.
What about Alfred?
Oh, more recently, Alfred.
Mm.
Like if they don't fix that?
That's going to be a problem.
Yeah.
I guess you could quantify Damien as being an answer to this
just
question.
His existence.
Yep. I mean, there's a lot of those. Yep. Jason Todd is almost that to me. Like, I get him out of there.
Oh, God. All right. Well, thanks for the email.
No way.
Thanks for the email. If you have any other questions, if you want to go away, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com. We always love to hear from you. Thank you so much for that.
For Josh, it's Cyclops' mask.
Yeah, right.
But I don't care about Cyclops one way or another. I do hate that mask, though. It's a bad mask. I will say, that Hawkeye example doesn't bother me. Because the Hawkeye who said, not like this, like this, that's actually Hawkeye. It's everything after that was a problem. And I enjoyed Matt Fraction's Hawkeye, but that ain't Hawkeye, is my point.
That's not my Hawkeye. All right, so email us at contact@ifanboy.com. It's always good to hear from you. Thank you so much. Speaking of DC... it has been a very DC-filled month as Batman vs. Superman was finally released in theaters. We recorded a podcast myself, Josh, Connor, and our good friend Mike Romo came on to discuss it. And I'll be honest, I kind of lost it a little.
And you didn't enjoy the film is what I gathered.
Did not enjoy the film. I'm really enjoying the think pieces coming out now explaining why it's so good and why Marvel fans don't get it. Those are my favorite too. Those are really good.
Why does it have to be that you're a Marvel fan if you didn't like the movie?
There were literally headlines that say Batman v Superman too smart for Marvel fans.
Well, I'm not. I wouldn't call myself a Marvel fan in that sense, and I didn't like it. So,
it should be a human being that didn't like the movie.
Yeah, it's
no,
insane.
No. This is the worst of us now. Is what happens after this? Is your reaction to other people's opinions?
Right? Yeah, exactly. So, but if you want to listen to the train wreck, you can go listen to our Batman vs Superman podcast. The link is up on iFanboy.com and it's in the feed. It's entertaining, at least. So,
mm-hmm.
To keep the versus theme going, we got Justice League versus Teen Titans coming out. The special edition podcast coming out in a couple of weeks. That's the latest DC animated original film. This one's actually worth being excited about because written by Brian Q. Miller, the fantastic comic book writer. And so you can look for that coming probably around the April 13th, 14th. That's probably when you'll get that Justice League vs. Teen Titans podcast.
We do another show, or will have been doing until very recently. Goodfellas Minute.
It's the last week of the episode.
Yeah, yeah, this is the last week of GoodfellasMinute.com. If you are interested in hearing us talk over the credits... Not over the credits, not a commentary, but about the credits and a lot of other things that are involved with that for what might be our longest shows of the entire thing.
They 100% are.
Yeah, there's that. So listen to us wrap that up. If you haven't started, go back and start. Goodfellas Minute from the beginning, we did it. So you don't have to worry now, like, I don't want to start. It might get canceled. It did not get canceled. We finished it.
Wait, was that an option?
Yeah, we could have just stopped.
Wait a minute. Could someone have canceled us?
Well, we could have canceled us.
Hey, guys, I got bad news. We got canceled.
By who?
Whoa. Oh. I really thought we had the numbers.
It was a good run.
Yeah, that was super fun. Don't ask what we're doing next. You can go over to ifanboy.com. Also, you can comment on this show. You can talk about the week's books. You can tell us what you think of the DC announcements. On the site or on Facebook or wherever it is that you want to do that. And you can find all of our other podcasts and shows and all the video shows we did. You can go back and listen to what we thought about the New 52 at the time and see if we said the same things. You can go to Facebook.com/iFanboy or iFanboy on Twitter. And you, of course, you can follow us individually at J.A. Flanagan, C.S. Kilpatrick, and Ron XO.
I had water in my mouth. And hey, if you like the show, write us a review on iTunes. Or better yet, tell your friends about us, introduce your mom to the podcast, help spread the iFanboy love. I can now drink more water. That's it for this week's show. Thanks for listening. I'm Connor.
I'm Ron.
Also, water. Water. Sorry. We're a hydrated podcast. That's not a bad thing. This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which, again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people, and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened. But it can be tough to deal with. And also, like, one of the things is, like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.